CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
It's Tuesday, March 19th, and your Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. Ben is roaring and ready to go. He's ready to talk to Bears. He's ready to talk to potential stadiums. He's ready to talk to politics with none other than Chicago sportscaster and media consultant, Tom Scher. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader, chicagoreader.com for everything there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, what's happening in politics, in art, in music around the city, anything that you want to know, head to chicagoreader.com. I guarantee you will find entertainment there. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky entertainment, go to chicagoreader.com/Jarofsky. That's JORAVSKY.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Ballot Day Tuesday, and here's why. Because it's Election Day in the city of Chicago. I voted right before I got here, but I'm not even really going to talk about that at all, ladies. I just wanted to acknowledge it, you know, for historians sifting through the rubble of civilization, and they come to Ben Jarofsky's show, interview with Tom Scher. They go, it was Election Day. He did that on Election Day. Okay, so the Election Day was the Democratic primary. Well, for me, I voted in the Democratic primary. Primary Election Day in Illinois, Biden and Trump on the ballot in their respective parties. All right. So the big news in Chicago, we got Tom Scher sitting by, and he'll bring him on real soon. But just so everybody knows, the big news in the city of Chicago this weekend, and it's hard to explain to folks who aren't in the sports, and I know a lot of people out there aren't in the sports, but the big news was that the Bears finally traded Justin Fields, their quarterback, been their quarterback for the last three seasons. And this was such a monumental moment in the culture of Chicago. It's hard to explain. I know a lot of you out there are not sports fans, but I'm going to connect the universes, the universe you don't care about, which is sports, and the universe you care about, which is politics. And so they finally traded Justin Fields. Everybody had an opinion in the Bears universe about whether they should keep Justin Fields or trade Justin Fields. Writers, pundits, ordinary people at the bowling alley last night, there were a million different attitudes and ideas about whether it was a good trade. But the funniest thing, I had fun with this. I wrote about this in the Reader today. The funniest thing is like the curious contradiction of Bear fans. And the only thing I could think of that is really analogous to it is that old vaudeville joke, which I'll drag out and butcher, I know, because I'm a terrible joke teller. But the waiter at a Catskills resort goes up to the diner and says, "Ma'am, what'd you think about the food?" And the woman says, "It was terrible and such small portions." And that just sort of sums up the Bears' attitudes about Justin Fields, because it's such a contradiction. On one hand, they were begging and pleading the Bears not to trade him. And as soon as the Bears traded him for a 6-round draft choice, they're like complaining. That's all we got. Oh, Bears fans, you don't even know what you're thinking. Because here's the reality, ladies and gentlemen. Here's the fickleness of sports and politics to a certain degree, but mainly sports at this point. If the Bears are successful with Caleb Williams, who they're going to draft, and they win a Super Bowl, or even make it to a Super Bowl, no one will be talking about Justin Fields except for a few old-timers like me. All right, without further ado, I'm going to bring my distinguished guest, Tom Scher, is very patiently waiting. He laughed at my vaudeville joke. Thank you, Tom, for doing that.
Very nice.
Yes. And so, folks who don't know Tom Scher, let me explain to you who he is. He is, and I'm reading from the description that he asked me to read, a long time a longtime Chicago sportscaster on Channel 5 and The Score Radio. Now a semi-retired media consultant. He's also, and this, all that is true. And I used to listen to Tom all the time when he was on the radio. And Look Alive was your call, one of your lines when callers were calling Look Alive.
That was it.
And then Tom went into politics, and then I would deal with him as a reporter. And from time to time, he would call or email and tell me, "You're an okay guy, Ben. You're way too left. You got to come more to the center." He always advice from Tom on political writing. But when I I thought you would be perfect, Tom, because you you also, and we're not going to go into the specifics of this, but you're also a negotiator. You negotiate contracts on behalf of broadcasters, right, quite a few in the city of Chicago and around the country, with the radio stations that they work for. And I thought it would be perfect to bring you on to make the connection between the Justin Fields trade and the political end of it. So let's take the political end first. All right, Tom?
All right. Yep.
So this is the political end of it. At the moment, the Chicago Bears are in the midst of convincing the public that they're very much interested in building a stadium with public financing on the lakefront, just south of Soldier Field. All right. At the same time, Tom, they've been negotiating with Arlington Heights and the school boards in and around Arlington Heights to build a stadium at the old Arlington racetrack. And in fact, correct, they purchased the track. They tore down. They demolished it. It's sitting right there. They could basically, they cut a deal with Arlington Heights. They could start building tomorrow. And so there's two schools of thought on this. One is that the negotiations with Arlington Heights is all an endeavor to force Chicago and the state to give them a good deal on the Soldier Field site. And the other is that the Soldier Field site negotiation is all an attempt to get a favorable deal out of Arlington Heights. In each instance, the one thing that's in common is that nobody believes the Bears are sincere. Everybody believes it's all just a ploy in negotiations. As a guy who's been on both sides of the table, I guess, negotiating, mm-hmm, how do you view it?
I think that what your friends and others are saying is half true. I think the Bears are involved in a negotiating ploy, but not on both sides. Look, there is always a possibility they could end up building or playing in a facility in Chicago, that you can never rule anything out. But why would they possibly want to be in Chicago when they could not get in Chicago, or at least on the lakefront? I have to stress lakefront. They could not possibly get on the lakefront what they want, which is not only a stadium, and they're willing to spend $2 billion of their own money along with the state money they're trying to get. They not only would get a new stadium, they would get all of the parking. Let me use that word again, parking. They currently get little or nothing from parking at Soldier Field. They also want a hotel, a Bears Hall of Fame, a small indoor entertainment venue, a colossal shopping mall-sized souvenir shop. There's big money in that. They want a sports book. Everybody else has a sports book. The Bears can't get a sports book. It's ridiculous. They can't get any of that on the lakefront. There's not enough land. It won't occur. They can get all of that in Arlington Heights. Now, if the city comes up with another spot, maybe the 78, but I don't think there's enough land there after everything else that the private development firm wants to build there. The U.S. Steelworks on the south side would be perfect, but I'm not sure the Bears want to go there. The ingress and egress is not that good for vehicular traffic. At this point, it's better. They built a lot of roads for a community that never came to fruition, the extension of Lakeshore Drive. And the interstate is not that far away. But still, the best location is Arlington Heights. And that's why they bought the land. That's what they want. I think they've been floating all this business with the lakefront and the city of Chicago as a way to get Arlington Heights off the dime. And it's actually not the village of Arlington Heights. In fact, it is now a fact that the village of Arlington Heights has proposed a property tax compromise, and it's up to the school districts, the taxing bodies, which get the property tax revenue, most of it. It's up to them to see if they'll get on board. And I've read the specifics of what the village of Arlington Heights is proposing as a compromise. It's pretty good. It's good for the Bears. And here's what these idiot school districts need to understand. And I was on a school board in Northfield Township for 4 years. You have to spend money to make money. So the school district saying, well, we're not giving a tax break. Okay, fine. Then you can get 100% of nothing. If you give a tax break, there's some development that generates property tax revenue, and you get that in perpetuity. So do you want a nice chunk of less, or do you want full chunk of nothing. Those are the choices, and I think they'll end up in Arlington Heights. I think that's the Bears' desire. Anybody with a brain does not want to be on the lakefront, and I'm shocked Kevin Warren, I'm not shocked to try and employ, but I would be shocked if he really wants that.
Okay, boy, there's a lot for me to counter. As you can imagine, people, I completely disagree with Tom on his analysis of the choice facing Arlington Heights. And I urge the school board not to listen to Tom, listen to Ben, stay strong, and tell the Bears to go elsewhere. But I want to concentrate on something that you said at the end, because this is very important, Tom, for people trying to decipher what is and isn't the truth, all right? And so follow me on this. There was an article in Cranes, that's where I believe I first saw it, that announced that Kevin Warren, okay, so ladies and gentlemen, the Bears are owned by the McCaskey family, and they hired Kevin Warren, who's a very ambitious, very successful sports management type, used to run the Big Ten commissioner, probably is on a list somewhere to be eventually the commissioner of the NFL, but he needs to be successful in Chicago. Be successful in Chicago, it means not just producing a winning team, but getting a stadium for the Bears, which they really want. So this article in Cranes said clearly that Kevin Warren has brought a new focus and attention to the Bears, that the old idea that the Bears would be in the suburbs was a Ted Phillips idea, Ted Phillips being the man who ran the show before he retired and Kevin Warren took over, and that Kevin Warren has a love for the lakefront. He wants that. He wants to be in the city, and he has made that clear. When people read that, Tom, in your humble opinion, are they supposed to believe it, or is it just fiction thrown at people in the guise?
I don't remember who wrote that piece. I don't think Greg Hines wrote it, because he's pretty savvy, and I don't think he would have bought that line of baloney. Kevin Warren loves the lakefront. How long has he lived here? Oh, a year. Gee, how about that? Look, and by the way, I'm not going to, you know, you disagree with me on the school boards, no problem. I'm not going to get into everything I disagree with you on, but I do have to say, I think you're giving Kevin Warren way more potential than he currently has. He left the Big Ten Conference in a mess. The television deal he negotiated included selling the rights to games the Big Ten did not own. And the new commissioner, a guy named Tony Petitti, who is sharp as a tack, I dealt with his operations in the past when he was at MLB Network. Tony Petitti came in and had to clean up this mess in a very short period of time. As far as the Minnesota stadium goes, Kevin Warren did some good work there. But the real work was done by another guy who still works for the Vikings and somehow hasn't gotten as much public credit. I'm not saying Kevin Warren is not a sharp, savvy, and capable person, but so far his body of work doesn't give me tremendous optimism. If he pulls this stadium deal off, then you'll hear me say, okay, here's a possible next commissioner. But I don't see him that way right now. But I don't believe that Kevin Warren wants to be in the city, is in love with the lakefront and all that nonsense. I think deep down he'd like to be in the city, because it's always great to be in a city. But the city cannot meet the Bears' needs. 190, what is it? I forget how many dozens, 100 some odd dozen, 130 acres out in Arlington Heights. I forget what the figure is. Those acres can meet the Bears' needs. That's why they bought it. It wasn't, you know, only Ted Phillips. There's a guy named George McCaskey, who's the chairman of the Bears. Mrs. McCaskey didn't want to be in the suburbs years ago. They had a chance to do a deal in Arlington Heights. A lot of people don't know this, but A. Robert Abood, a very well-known banker in Chicago for many years, and then later a private developer and businessman, the late A. Robert Abood, a great, great man, Bob Abood, brother of clothing designer Joseph Abood, he helped put together a deal to build a stadium in Arlington Heights in that area, in the northwest suburbs. I believe it was Arlington Heights. And at the very late in the game, Mrs. McCaskey could not go along with that. Mm-hmm. And they pulled the plug on the idea. I don't know how far along it got. I know the financing was in place. That I know because Bob Abood handled a lot of that financing. And he said at the last minute, they didn't proceed further because Mrs. McCaskey could not bear to take the Bears out of the city of Chicago. George Halas talked about doing it in the early 70s. And Mayor Daley said, you can take them out there. In fact, I think George Halas was talking about Arlington Heights. You remember what the mayor said, right, Ben?
Yeah, it'll be the Arlington Heights Bears.
Right. You can't call them Chicago. So I think that's where they want to be. And I think that's where they're going to end up.
All right. So just so you know, it was Greg Hines. I looked it up.
Wow.
Yeah, it was Greg Hines, my old poker playing pal. Many, many years ago, Tom, I played in a poker game with Greg Hines.
Well, great. Listen.
He knows how to hold him.
Greg's a great guy, but he also once told me that he wasn't going to correct a major factual error in a piece in Cranes. He said this to me. It's Friday and it's late and I can't get anybody to do it, but it doesn't matter because nobody's going to read this over the weekend anyway. And I said, no, Greg, you got to correct it right away. It lives on the internet, even if one person reads it. Well, we'll get to it Monday. So he actually told me that. So I'm not sure. I think Greg's pretty sharp, but it's possible he got schnookered on this Kevin Warren loves Chicago business.
Well, I'll read you the exact. So here is the tweet that Greg Hines set out. Yeah. Greg, Chicago Bears Stadium search now focusing on City Lakefront, not Arlington Heights. How come and what else is on the table? Like maybe converting most of Soldier Field to a public park. Lots more too. That's his tweet. And then in the article he wrote, and I'm quoting, but the big reason for the shift to a city focus has been a change at the top of the Bears organization with Kevin Warren succeeding Ted Phillips as Ted president. Like team ownership and other Bears brass, Phillips had a suburban focus. After all, the team's headquarters is in leafy Lake Forest. Warren came from the Big Ten and before that built a stadium for the Minnesota Vikings in downtown Minneapolis. He lives in Chicago. He praised the city's glories in a recent comments to the media, and the Bears' own website features a day in the life profile of him in which, while driving from downtown apartment to Soldier Field, he waxes about his love for a beautiful city. So there you go. Yeah, it was Greg. I remember when it came out.
Well,
And
I can look, if it's on the record of the Bears website that he loves the city, I'll walk back my comment only to this extent. I do believe he loves the city, and Greg reported accurately. And I believe he also reported accurately that he was told that the Bears' focus is now shifting to the city. He reported what he was told. When somebody ever told me anything, I always said, well, why are they telling me this? As a good reporter always says, why is this information being given to me? Or when I go to dig it out, why is it there to get? And I think that's a position the Bears wanted to be known. So I'll grant this. Kevin Warren loves Chicago. And I think he's a decent guy. I have nothing against him. But I don't think he loves Chicago as the future home of a new stadium and a mega entertainment complex that the Bears want.
So, Tom, what's your advice to citizens of Chicago, or citizens who read the newspaper, read the media, listen to the TV? What's your advice to them? Like, what are you supposed to believe? Like, people say things, and then you got to kind of, like, read between the lines to figure out what's going on. Does anybody say what they mean? Does anybody speak the truth? Is it all?
I think most public figures do not. I think they don't lie. They parse the truth a little. They're very careful. They're very cautious. I think Jerry Reinsdorf speaks the truth in most cases. I really do. I think, you know, George McCaskey is a decent, honorable guy. I think Danny Wirtz and Michael Reinsdorf, who run the Bulls, probably run the Blackhawks, and Michael runs the Bulls with his father as the final word. I think they're decent, honorable men who tell the truth. But sometimes they have to be a little careful and they have to look at things in a certain way. For instance, Jerry Reinsdorf said, well, you know, at this location, we could draw better downtown. That's a fact. Jerry Reinsdorf didn't even want to build the new stadium in Bridgeport. He was forced to by the state's sports facilities authority. They forced him to take that site because there was no cost for land acquisition. They saved tens of millions of dollars because they didn't have to buy land in the South Loop. Reinsdorf and the late Mayor Washington, God rest his soul, they wanted the White Sox new stadium to be in the South Loop. It never went anywhere in the Washington administration. Al Johnson, his stadium, Mayor Washington's stadium negotiator, wanted the South Loop. So Reinsdorf wanted the South Loop 35 years ago because that's where you can really draw people. Everything feeds into the city. But he took the South Side right across the street from the old park because that was the best deal he could get from the state. So now when he says we can't draw as well here as we could there, that's absolutely true. But when he says, look, after the World Series, we didn't even crack 3 million. Well, that's not a fair comment because they had 2.95 million. And since when is since when is 3 million the benchmark? You know, it used to be 2 million. Now it's probably around 2.4. you really strive for that. I mean, obviously some teams like the Cubs and the Dodgers and the Red Sox, they're going to either approach or exceed 3 million in most years. But so you have to kind of look at everything that's said, but I think a lot of these guys speak a good portion of the truth. And I think Reinsdorf is the most plain spoken, honest one of the bunch.
All right. Now look, let's just decipher what Reinsdorf said way back when. He goes, I'd rather be in the South Loop than Bridgeport. They gave him a great deal in Bridgeport. So effectively, as a negotiator, isn't that just a negotiating ploy by Reinsdorf to say, okay, I really want to go to the South Loop, but just to compromise with you guys, I'll go to Bridgeport, knowing that he's getting a hell of a deal in Bridgeport. So it makes it look like he's giving something up when, in fact, he's pretty much getting everything he wanted. Go.
I don't think that was the case, because at the time he accepted Bridgeport, the alternative was Tampa, Florida. The South Loop horse had left the barn years before. So I don't think so. He was going to get a good deal wherever the state agreed to build the stadium. That deal would have been a good deal. In fact, I would submit that he got a little bit less of a deal on the South Side than he would have in the South Loop, because he had to give up his parking lot property. He gets the parking revenue, all of it, but he could have gotten that somewhere else and sold his land at 35th and Shields.
So if you were advising Mayor Brandon Johnson, believing everything that...
One of the worst mayors we've ever had. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Completely disagree with
that. We gave the keys to a $3 billion corporation to a guy who's never run a lemonade stand.
Okay.
Wonderful. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, just so you know, Tom Scherer and I pretty much agree on nothing on that.
Yeah. And I'm a Democrat.
Yeah, he is a Democrat.
But okay. I'm one of the few Democrats who speaks the truth. God forbid we should criticize a young up and coming politician like Brandon Johnson, who was created by Toni Preckwinkle because she wanted to get rid of Rich Boykin on the county board. But that's a separate deal. Go ahead.
First of all, tell me, Toni Preckwinkle. You should like Toni Preckwinkle.
I think Toni Preckwinkle has been an outstanding county board president. So and what she's done financially for the county is
you should be happy.
Well, I think what she's done as county board president and getting the county finances in pretty good shape is to be applauded.
How can a Democrat hate on Toni Preckwinkle?
I don't hate on Toni Preckwinkle. I hate on Brandon.
Political organization, the Democratic organization. She's probably the shrewdest Democratic mind in the country.
I'm not hating on anybody. That's a pretty strong word. But it's just
Brandon Johnson, and he's a creation of Toni Preckwinkle. He is.
Does that mean I'm hating on Brandon Johnson? I'm just stating a fact. She wanted to get rid of Rich Boykin. She created Brandon Johnson. He ran for county board president with her backing and the teachers union backing. He got it. God bless him. He won fair and square. Then all of a sudden, he's qualified to be mayor of the city of Chicago.
He ran for Cook County Commissioner.
Board of Commissioners, yeah.
Yeah, beat Richard Boykin.
He beat Rich Boykin because she got tired of Rich Boykin as floor leader or whatever his role was.
No, she got tired of him. Richard Boykin was leading the charge on the sugar tax. He was leading the charge against the sugar tax, and he used that to run. He was going to run against her. And so she, look, she's a...
No, wait a second. Here is where you're saying something which shows a little bit more knowledge on the political aspect of how... Boykin fell out of favor. You're right. I forgot that. All I'm saying is Toni Preckwinkle created Kim Fox. She created Brandon Johnson. And Brandon Johnson was not qualified, and remains so, to be the mayor of the city of Chicago. That's all I'm saying. Is he more qualified than Paul Vallis, who had actually run?
Oh, my God, yes.
Okay.
Oh, my God. You weren't here for Paul Vallis. You were covering sports in the 90s when Vallis was covering the Board of Ed. I could give you chapter and verse, young Tom Scherer, about Paul. Yes.
I'm the one.
He's a Republican.
I'm the one. I'm the one. I'm the one who took us down this path.
Yes, you did, young man.
I will. I'll humbly apologize. You're saying, you asked me, if I'm Brandon Johnson, what would I do?
Now, yeah. Well, if you're advising Brandon Johnson. Okay.
Right.
So let's say you got over your bias against Brandon Johnson and recognized him.
And by the way, I have to stress in these times, because whenever you criticize certain politicians, there's something untoward or unfair personally about it. I'm anti-Brandon Johnson strictly on ability and qualifications, on nothing else. And you know what I mean. Go ahead.
All right. So let's say Brandon Johnson called you up and said, you know, Tom, I'm going to put aside all the mad nasty things you said about me in the Ben Jarofsky show. And I'm going to appreciate the advice, the ability you have to give sound advice. And so I'm going to overlook whatever limitations you showed when you endorsed Paul Ballas. And I'm going to overlook
the guy I wanted, by the way. I wish Gary Chico had been mayor.
Okay. Well, he was the other guy running the school in the 90s. Right, okay. Right, don't get me started.
All right. Go ahead.
So he calls you up. He goes, Tom, I need to make sense of this. You know, how legit are the, should I just ignore them? Should I just say, Kevin, thanks for the offer, but no thanks, because I don't believe you're sincere?
No, not at all. I think Brandon Johnson is handling it correctly right now. I think he's listening. He's willing to make a deal if a deal can be made. And he, unfortunately for him, he might be the stalking horse, but he has to run the race. I think he's doing everything properly. I don't know the specifics of what he even has said. The mayor has said publicly there haven't been a lot of specifics put forth, but I'm willing to talk and make a deal. Look, it's still possible they end up in Chicago, and that would be obviously great for the city because of the tax it would, municipal taxes it would generate. That said, I still think they're going to be in Arlington Heights, but Brandon Johnson can't take that for granted. He has to do his best to cut a deal. And so far, he's handled it a lot better than Lori Lightfoot handled it, I'll tell you that.
Well, look at that. So a little praise for Brandon Johnson.
Oh, maybe yeah.
More to the guy than just being the guy that Tony Preckwinkle sent. He's handling it well.
In this case, let's see if what type of deal is proposed. And all I can tell you is he's at a tough spot because I think deep in his belly, he knows he's a stalking horse. But there's Michael Reese. There's the 78. There's the U.S. Steelworks. Maybe a deal. If the Bears can get what they want, have at it. I just don't see it anywhere but Arlington Heights right now, which is why the Bears have continued to talk to the village and why the village officials saw fit to put forth this compromise, which came out last night.
By the way, by the time we get to the end of this conversation, Tom will be openly endorsing Brandon Johnson. He's already gone from saying he's hardly unqualified to saying he's done a good job, better than Lori Lightfoot. So it's an improvement. Running the city of Chicago right now. By the time we end up, he goes, you know, Ben, you're right. Paul Ballas, what a schmuck. I wouldn't vote for him in a million years. All right. So I hope folks are listening. The takeaway is something that I preach all the time when it comes. This is my belief. And I'll get Tom's thoughts on this. But my personal belief is kind of what Tom said. When you see a story in a paper that's coming, it's broadcast as a scoop, when in fact it's a handout, when in fact it's based on something that a publicist told the reporter, or maybe an off-the-record comment from the team president,
right?
Be very cautious. Be a very concerned, because the price a person pays for that scoop is to give that person pretty much unfettered space. Just give them that space and their publication, Tom, to say what they want, to put their best position out there, and to spin the public. That's my advice to citizens who want to be critical thinkers. Your response?
I think that's very sound advice. And, you know, look, I was critical of Greg Hines on some things that happened years ago, but I also think if you read his pieces, he'll say, so-and-so says such and such. But if he thinks there's evidence or facts to the contrary, he'll say, however, comma, and then he'll print those facts too and let the reader decide. But I think the reader absolutely should do what you just said. And I don't think enough people do that. I think they pretty much take things at face value. And you got to kind of look behind and say, why would that be the case? Why would the Bears want to talk to the city of Chicago right now when they didn't have anything to say to Chicago for such a long time? That's a very key approach. Very key approach. But I will say to people, before we get off of this Arlington Heights business, parking, sportsbook. Two things the Bears don't have. One thing they've never had in Chicago, parking. One thing they've tried to get, and the Park District has treated them very poorly, sportsbook. So that's why they'll end up in Arlington Heights.
Yeah. All right, let's move on from the Bears and go to the White Sox. Now, my sense of this story, and feel free to vehemently disagree, as I know you will, is this largely came out of a developer's need to develop his big chunk of undeveloped land. And that would be the 78, which, as I always point out, is a big chunk of undeveloped land on the Chicago River, just south of Roosevelt Road. It's been vacant for years and years, Tom, as you know. There have been very proposals that come from the city, that have come to the city, and they haven't gone anywhere. And this is the one that seems to have gotten the most traction. The White Sox building their stadium there. And it's got the most public notoriety. It's got the most attention. It's actually been considered by legislators in Springfield. Governor Pritzker has been forced to comment on it. Brandon Johnson's been forced to comment on it. Mm-hmm. How real do you think this proposal is?
I think it's very, very real. And I think it's going to happen. And I think it would be good for the city because they're currently not making a nickel off of that land. And we can get into the whole issue of public subsidies for stadia. I'm happy to do that. But I think anything which creates an entertainment hub, cities have to survive as business and entertainment hubs. That's what Mayor Daley did. It started a little bit under Mayor Eugene Sawyer. Mayor Daley really took it to where it should have been, brought us back to a world-class city. Other mayors since then have maintained it, but I think you have to constantly keep moving forward. They've got to develop that land. I don't see how it can't be just sitting there all this time. So I think it's going to happen. I think it's a good location, not as good as they could have done across from Soldier Field where those railroad yards are and everything else when the White Sox wanted to be there and Mayor Washington wanted them there. As I said, this is back in 85, 6, 7, 8, right in there. The mayor passed away in 87. By that point, they were already committed to build in Bridgeport. But Al Johnson and Harold Washington wanted stadia built in the South Loop. In fact, the White Sox at one point, they no longer feel this way, and neither do the Bears. Well, the Bears never wanted a multi-purpose stadium. The White Sox at one point were willing to accept a multi-purpose stadium with the Bears in the South Loop. And Michael McCaskey said on the public record, an interview, I think it was John McCarron of the Tribune, he said, no, we don't want to partner with the White Sox. If we partnered with any baseball team, it would be the Cubs because we have a historic partnership with them. In fact, Mike McCaskey, who was not a good guy, George McCaskey, the late Tim McCaskey, Brian, they're good people, and they want to do what's right. But Mike McCaskey, I don't know, he was just off the wall. He didn't like Reinsdorf because Reinsdorf drove up the price of Bears stock when some privately held shares were being sold. McCaskey's thought they could get it at a pretty good price, and then Jerry went for it, and the price went up, and they held it against him. So he was willing, though, to accept the multi-purpose stadium in the South Loop.
Yeah, by the way, I would argue with you, just so folks know, it is a TIF, and so if they start producing more in taxes, that's not a nickel if it's going to go to the coffers in the city of Chicago. Just so you know that, ladies and gentlemen, that's how a TIF operates. Tom knows that because he works for the assessor, so he understands how TIFs
work. I understand.
Yep, so it would all go to the TIF coffers, and it would be used to build the stadium and the development deal. So the public schools wouldn't get a nickel. The Chicago parks wouldn't get a nickel. The libraries wouldn't get. Nobody would get a nickel.
Don't forget, you're ignoring the tax revenue generated by having events in the city. There's sales tax goes to the state. The city gets a portion. People park in the city to go to the games. Wherever they park, the city gets parking tax. The city of Chicago. People stop and buy something to eat on the way. I lived in the city for the last 12 years, and geez, maybe even more, 14 years. And anything I do in the city's making money from it, which I think is great. People come and stay in hotels in the city. They get taxes, which go to the city. Some of them.
Wait, the hotel motel tax is still that people pay when they go to the city. I don't know how many people are coming into Chicago to stay in a hotel to watch the White Sox. They can't even get people who live in Chicago to go to watch the White Sox. But that hotel motel tax White Sox and the Bears.
A Major League Baseball team that plays 81 home games a year generates between 6,000 and 7,000 hotel rooms used strictly by the visiting team and the media every year. Visiting baseball teams generate 6,000 or 7,000 hotel rooms. Before the fans come in, they may say, well, what kind of fans? The White Sox don't draw a lot of... Wait a minute. Detroit, Cleveland, Minnesota, Milwaukee, St. Louis. Whenever those teams play here, go to the games. Go to the games. See where these people are coming from. Separate from the people who come from Iowa to watch the Cubs or the people who spend a weekend from Northwest Indiana or other parts to watch the White Sox and Bears. I'm telling you. State.
Let me just repeat. The hotel motel tax has generated a good degree of it is already going to pay for the construct the cost of building that White Sox stadium. Just want to point that out. And building.
No, that's the hotel motel. That's the hotel motel.
We just got finished saying that.
No, wait a minute, Ben.
Chicago, they stay at a hotel. They pay a hotel motel tax. That's going to the Sox and the Bears already. Go ahead.
Ben, that's a portion goes to the stadium. The rest of it goes to the city and I believe some of the state, but I'm not sure. The city gets, if it's a $10 tax, the stadium doesn't get all of that. They get the added tax. There was a couple percent or 1.5% added when they built New Sox Park in 1991, and then they kept taking it when they redid Soldier Field in the museum campus. Not all of the hotel motel tax goes to stadium. It never
a good chunk of it does.
And not even the majority of it.
And as a sound fiduciary, as I know you are, you would not in a million years want to give more money to a developer while you're still paying him the money. Who does that? When you bring that, when you get your house, when you get your bathroom remodeled, you pay the guy, you're still paying him off. Do you go in the middle of it and pay him more money?
Now that is where you and I are going to find a lot of agreement because, because the White Sox stadium is nearly paid for. Okay. Nearly, it might be 40 or 50 million left. Doesn't sound like much. But believe me, that can easily be paid off. I don't even think it's 50. The Bears remodeling, and it wasn't just Soldier Field. I think the figure was 600 or 700 million. It wasn't all for Soldier Field. That was only about 400 million. The rest of it went to the museum campus and redirecting streets and creating more park space and building the music pavilion and everything else.
No, they had to move. They had to move that the park district's headquartered facility because the Bears Stadium was going to take the land. So they had to move that. What a fiasco that. We don't even want to know about fiasco.
But all I'm saying is you and I agree. There's a lot of money still owed, and they refinanced that debt, and they did some sort of dipsy doodle. They've barely paid any of the Soldier Field Museum campus debt. That's shameful. That's been mismanaged terribly. But the White Sox stadium actually has been a decent deal, even though it's been a great deal for the White Sox. Let me run something else by you. And this is something I'm shocked that the White Sox haven't talked about this. I heard my good friend and a guy I really like and respect, Dan Bernstein, say on The Score, and his partner, Lawrence Holmes, I think said the same thing. I'm not sure, but Bernstein said it. Hey, If the White Sox leave, I'm a White Sox fan. I don't want them to leave. But if they go to Nashville, go ahead. Okay, that's what he said. I would submit to people who don't ever hear this, and I'm shocked the White Sox haven't put this out. The state of Illinois receives income tax on more than $500 million in income earned by visiting athletes. If I'm an athlete who lives in Florida and I play for the Florida Marlins, I come in here and play six games a year against the Cubs or three. Those games, 1/160 of my salary is my per game pay in baseball. 81 of my games are taxed as income in Florida where I live. The other 81 are taxed where I play. So you have the White Sox, Bulls, Blackhawks, Bears, and Cubs, the players are earning their home game income in this state. Illinois gets the state income tax on that, not their state of residence. And the visiting players playing an equal number of games in the aggregate pay their income tax here. Think about that. Nobody ever talks about the tens and tens of millions of dollars of tax revenue the state of Illinois gets in income tax every year.
So what we should do, and this is the advice you would give Brandon Johnson, now that you think of him as one of the best mayors the city's ever had, you've gone from not liking to liking him. One of the pieces of advice you would give to him.
If anybody's just tuning in, I like him on one line item. I don't believe he's a good mayor otherwise. Go ahead.
Just tuning in on it. Well, it's true. They could on a podcast.
Yeah.
All right. They could just just swipe to wherever we are.
You know, you're right, actually. I forgot about it. I'm not living in the 21st century.
Go ahead. All right. So your advice to him is that you got to make the argument. See, Chicago, all these mayors that I have issues with, Rahm, Daley at the top of the list,
right?
They never made the arguments. They kept the public in the dark. They figured, we cut a deal. The public doesn't need to know. We'll build a library here and there every now and then, and they'll love us. But they never broke it down. So if there's an argument to be made, Tom, that the city of Chicago is actually making more money than it's spending, which I don't believe. And remember, we began this conversation by telling people you can't believe everything you hear, because a lot of it is hype. A lot of it is spin.
Right.
A lot of it is a ploy to get you to think they're going to the lakefront, but they're actually looking at Arlington Heights. They want to squeeze more money out of it. So if you can't believe anything that the city says, if you have to come with that attitude, then you need an ironclad agreement. You have to be like a banker who's going, you're coming to him to borrow money, a mortgage for your house. That's how you have to view it. And a banker's not going to go, well, oh, we're going to make money on this deal because Tom Scherer said so on the Ben Jarofsky show. No, I need to see substantiation for it, Tom. I need to see evidence for it. I need to see the proof for it. Then you can make an informed judgment. Do you agree with me on that point?
I completely agree with you. And I think that there is a school of thought, well, what the public doesn't know won't hurt them. Try it out. Try the public. Let's see how it goes. You know, certain matters of national security, obviously you can't share that, but this is not a matter of national
Absolutely.
Security. So,
yeah. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, so that's all. I think there's a lot to be said for having sports teams in a city or in a region or in a state. And I don't know how much of Chicago's money this would be. I'm thinking mostly of state money.
Yeah.
But if the team is in the city limits of Chicago, Chicago does benefit substantially. And I hear all these people saying, oh, there's this stadium expert and this guy from Lake Forest College and that guy. Well, it's been proven that stadia are not. I disagree. I'm not saying they make huge money, but I think if you're breaking even or losing a little bit in the long run, and in the short, medium, and long run, you're winning.
All right. By the way, just to, I just noticed this. Over Tom's head is a photo of John F. Kennedy and Lyndon Baines Johnson.
That's right.
His position as a Democratic Party.
That's right. By the way, am I on video or is this just audio?
It's only audio.
Okay, just checking.
No, I mean, you are on video. I can see you.
Yeah, but the listener can't. Okay, yeah. Yeah, that this poster I'm pointing to for Ben, that came from my late brother's house. He was a collector of stuff. There's some Kennedy stuff next to it. I've got my White Sox poster. I've got a Wrigley Field poster. I got Comiskey Park. I got everything. I love Chicago.
All right. So, Tom.
And I'm a lifelong Democrat. I'm just a moderate Democrat who speaks the truth.
No, Tom. I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, you should have said, I got those emails. Ben, you're such a leftist. Ben.
Oh, really? Did I say that to you?
I wrote. You're and those Bernie supporters.
But I do love you, Ben.
Yes, I know you do. All right. So we've valuable lessons have been imparted here, ladies and gentlemen. You got to learn to read between the lines. And Tom and I agree to that wholeheartedly. All right. Let's talk a little sports. All right. By the way, I just have to say this. I'm kind of a hypocrite. I got to be I just got to be honest. I'm a little like the diner at the in the Catskills who said the food's terrible and the portions are small. I mean, I have such a sentimental attachment to the White Sox.
Yeah.
That if they left the city, I squeal about it. I can't stand the public subsidy to hand out, but I do love the White Sox and I do enjoy going to games. White Sox, I'm so mad at them right now. I don't think I'll go to any games this year, but that's a whole other story. That's because of on the field stuff. All right. So let's talk about Justin Fields, the great debate over Justin Fields as a quarterback. Let's just leave aside the nickels and dimes and whether we believe what the Bears are saying, the posturing that they do, et cetera, and so forth. In your humble opinion, as a longtime sports observer, do you think that was a good football decision to trade Justin Fields? And are the Bears in a better shape from a football perspective because they're going to head in a new direction, probably drafting Caleb Williams?
Yes, I think it was a good move. I think, well, first of all, did they get a lot? Not as much as people thought, but the more time went by, they're in a box. I mean, Ryan Poles telegraphed at the scouting combine in Indianapolis that he was going to trade the kid. I mean, everybody knew that. So your bargaining position is weakened. I don't think so they didn't get a lot, but not a problem in my view. They got plenty of draft picks, but the issue really was Justin Fields the future? And I don't think he was. You can't consistently win football games if you're relying on the athleticism of your quarterback. And don't forget, it's not just about now. they were going to have a decision on giving Fields a new big contract in a year or two. So I think this was a move they had to make. It's risky because Caleb Williams could be a bust. They don't think he will be. I don't watch a lot of game film. I can't tell you much about this kid. I watched him play three games. He looked pretty good to me. So, you know, it's always a risk, but I think it was a smart move. I do.
So when at the time in 2017, I've lost track of time, when the Bears drafted Mitch Trubisky over Patrick Mahomes, were you a astute enough follower of college football to say, what are you doing?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was not astute enough to know if Mitch Trubisky was worth it, but I was astute enough to know that nobody was worth it. They didn't have to trade to move up to get him. They could have gotten him. And Dan Wiederer in the Tribune wrote a lengthy analysis of how that decision was made. And Ryan, what's the other Ryan? The white guy with the parted hair. Ryan Pace. Ryan Pace, the previous general manager, didn't consult with anybody. He made that decision in a vacuum. And here's where I'm going to give Kevin Warren his props. And you're a big Bulls fan. I'll tell you a story which helps the Bears. When the Bulls were ready to draft, when they were preparing and planning to draft Horace Grant, who was a great power forward for them, as you know, they decided to draft Horace Grant. Jerry Krause came up with the idea to draft Horace Grant and Scottie Pippen that same year, blah, 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 blah. Apparently, late in the process, Jerry Krause changed his mind, and all the coaches and scouts, everybody agreed, we're going to draft Horace Grant. Changed his mind, said, I'm not drafting Horace Grant. I forget who else he was going to draft.
The guy from North Carolina, go.
Okay.
The guy from North Carolina, go okay. ahead.
Doug Collins said, no, Grant, you know, he's the guy. And you said. But anyway, Doug was smart, and they either Doug alone or somebody else together, I don't know, they went to Jerry Reinsdorf. And Jerry Reinsdorf, as the chief executive, convened a meeting of the basketball people, Jerry Krause, Doug Collins, the coaches, everybody, the assistants, the scouts, I don't know, whoever, the water boy, and said, now tell me why you want Horace Grant, and Jerry Krause, tell me why you used to want him, now you don't. And he listened to everybody, and at the end said, we're going to stay the original course, we're taking Horace Grant. He didn't hear a compelling reason for Jerry Krause to argue against his own original decision. So I believe that if a guy like Ryan Pace ever comes along, and I don't think Ryan Poles, the current Bears general manager, is this way, but if Kevin Warren had been around, he's a stronger CEO than the Bears have ever had. He would not say to Ryan Pace, which was a noble idea for George McCaskey and Ted Phillips to say, look, you're the football guy. We're not going to interfere. You're the football guy. But it didn't work because that guy made a bad decision in a vacuum. I think Kevin Warren now would say, okay, Ryan Poles, I think he has said this. You want to trade Justin Fields? Tell me why. You want to draft Caleb Williams? Tell me why. And he, as a chief executive officer, knows how to evaluate a process or a decision. And I think they're in better shape now with a guy like Warren in that role to play that role of checks and balances, which is the same role Reinsdorf has often played. Hell, the White Sox once Ron Shuler wanted to hire Larry Boa as manager, but Shuler knew that Reinsdorf would never go along with that.
Yeah.
So they hired Gene Lamont, who was so-so. They won a division under Geno, but you know, a good owner makes sure that you avoid bad decisions.
Yeah. Well, one bad decision Jerry Reinsdorf made last year, he did not hire Ozzie Guillen. We all know that. All right,
That was a good decision not to. I love Ozzie, but bringing him back would have been. People forget how badly it ended with Ozzie back in the day.
Okay, everybody deserves a second chance. All right, now here. By the way, just to help you out, the man's name that you were trying to think of is Joe Wolf.
Oh no! Michael wanted them to take Joe Wolf. They weren't gonna.
Joe Wolf, 1987. Joe Wolf is the guy that supposedly.
You're right. Yep, yeah, you're absolutely right. No,
I know I'm right.
I know you're right. You're all wrong.
The guy they should have drafted, you know, it's easy to do this in retrospect. The guy they should have drafted was taken. Horace Grant was taken with the 10th pick. The 11th pick was one Reggie Miller. Reggie Miller you met Reggie Miller or Michael Jeffrey Jordan in the same backcourt. Wow.
Yeah. Well, but you know what? You can't play with two basketballs at once. I'm not sure that would have worked. They needed power. They won three championships with Horace Grant at power forward. Last time I checked, I'm still looking for Reggie Miller's first title.
You know what, Tom? Of all the arguments you've thrown at me today, I swatted all of them aside. I was Mutombo blocking every shot you threw at me. You were helplessly spinning in the lane trying to get your shot off. That, I'm going to close it on that one because that's the best retort you've had all show. It took you 40 minutes to come up with a good retort, but you finally came up. You came in strong in the hoop. You faked me. I went for the fake. You hit the shot. And you got fouled. Now you're at the line. Well, unfortunately, missed the free throw, ladies and gentlemen. But you're absolutely correct. I sit corrected.
That's okay.
You know what? Horace, I love you. Three championships. What can I say? Yes, you're absolutely right. I don't know if they would have won one. Just the thought of – I love Reggie Miller. That's a whole different story. As a player, I loved him when he was in Indiana. Yeah, it's true. Yeah. All right, Tom, I'm going to let you go. I know you got a lot of stuff pressing today. Thank you very much. We shall see if your prediction is true. Sooner or later, the Bears are going to have to play their hand on Arlington Heights, and you're absolutely correct. The Tribune dropped a story today about a counterproposal offered by the politicians, the elected officials in Arlington Heights.
But not the school board. The school boards have to go along with it.
That is correct. You
know, they have to decide, do we want a chunk of less money or do we want 100% of no money?
Or do we take the chance of developing into something else, which brings in more money? We don't have to pay.
Well, I told a story at the beginning of this podcast. We had the school board in Northfield Township High School District 225. So the land sat vacant for another 10 years. Okay, somebody might redevelop Arlington Park. But when?
I have to make a confession, ladies and gentlemen. I can't affirm what Tom said, and I can't counter it. Because it's the first time I've ever heard this.
Oh, it's on the public record. It was, okay. I'll tell you the year. It was 2004, I believe. 2004, 2005, right in there.
But, you know, I'll do my homework and maybe we'll do a whole show.
No problem. Actually, hold on. I got on the board November 23. I think it was November 2023 or 2024. Probably 2003 or 2004, right in there.
And the next time he comes on, I'm going to track down the email or text that he sent me complaining about whatever. I'm too far to the left. And he still came on the show, ladies and gentlemen. You got to give him credit for that. All right, Tom, thank you very much.
Can I say one thing before I go?
Go.
I have to say this anytime I get the chance. Donald J. Trump is the biggest abomination in the history of American elected office. And unfortunately, he was elected in a free and fair election. So too is Joe Biden. I hope everybody has a nice day.
We agree on that point. We close with agreement. Mutombo's not blocking that shot because he did it. All right, very good. That's Tom Scherer. Thank you very much, Tom. Also want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. And I think Tom will agree when I say, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And remember, previous Benny J shows all available for your downloading pleasure at chicagoreader.com. You can follow Benny J on Instagram at Benny J Show. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and tell your friends about the Ben Jarofsky Show.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.